약간 무리 된 보이지가 않아.
Sandy.
And this is Cindy.
And we're here to bring you the third episode of Two Peas in a Drama Pod, where two twins like to talk about Asian dramas.
What we just played was Jaywalking by Eye Candy, because later in the show we're going to talk about Shut Up Flower Boy Band. So look forward to that review. And we will also be recapping episode 15 and 16 of A Gentleman's Dignity and episode 13 and 14 of Bridal Mask. We're just going to do the summaries, and then we'll post extended recaps on the website right after we post the podcast on the website. So check out the extended recaps. So let's go straight into news.
Right. So, as you all know, the London 2012 Olympics is coming up, which I'm so excited for. That's the only time where I watch sports that don't matter, like swimming, ping pong, gymnastics, etc. But, unfortunately, because of this event that only comes every 4 years, SBS is temporarily postponing some of their Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night dramas. Mainly the one that we're going to be recapping, A Gentleman's Dignity. It's going to go on a brief hair. It hasn't been verified yet, but I think that they're proposing that episodes 17 and 18 will air normally, and then the following two episodes after that will not air. The last two freaking episodes of the season will not air until the second week of August.
We're going to be kept in suspense for like 3 weeks. It's going to kill me. Please have
the
mercy
very
on our
last
hearts.
Two episodes. The Olympics are scheduled to air from July 27th to August 12th. So excited, go USA! Additionally, SBS has also made arrangements to air a special episode of The Chaser before the Olympics start on July 24th, and the new drama, Faith, starring Lee Min Ho and Kim Hae Sun, is going to start airing on August 13th after the game's over. So we've got two things to look forward to after the Olympics is over. In addition to the Olympics, which is going to be awesome in itself, A Gentleman's Dignity is going to start back up, and Faith is premiering.
And speaking of Faith, the trailer for that came out, so you should check that out because it looks pretty awesome. Aside from the fact
doesn't
that
matter,
knows it, so... Okay, so some casting news. Kim Jae-won is officially going to be in May Queen, which I'm super excited about because I haven't seen that much stuff that he's in, but he's so cool. And other stuff, Ki Tae-young from Creating Destiny is also going to be a part of the adaptation of the Japanese manga Hanakimi to The Beautiful You. So I'm really excited about that. He's playing the doctor in the series, so if any of you guys have seen the Japanese version or the Taiwanese version, he's going to be playing the doctor, who's kind of like her confidant, who knows that she's a girl. And I'm so excited for this drama to come out.
Oh my gosh, I love this manga. This was like the very first manga that I ever read, and I love it. It's gonna be awesome. And a really great thing about it is they better not mess this up because the manga's already written. Like, just follow that and it'll be awesome.
The story for this is so good and it's so funny. They would have to do a lot to mess this one up. But the director, yeah, he directed Delightful Girl, Chunhyang, My Girl, and Boys Over Flowers, so I think it's going to be a really, really good adaptation, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I cannot wait. Well, who does Mino play? Just a random guy?
I think he plays the track star.
What?
Either that,
really?
Or the third guy, the third wheel.
I don't see him play the track star. I imagine a different guy playing track star.
The third wheel.
I just don't
He's a pretty major character.
Hopefully he plays the third wheel or something, because I don't see Mino play the track star. He just seems so... He doesn't really fit the image that I was thinking of for a high jump star.
I know. I'm trying to think who I would cast as that.
I'd definitely cast some
that
guy.
Oh,
really,
you know that guy from... Okay, so Rooftop Prince, the guard?
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, I don't know if his acting skills are that great, but I think that image after he cut his hair.
Yeah, that's the image. Continuing on.
So, the NBC union has now officially come to an end, beginning on July 18th. Everyone will return to work. The labor union had happened because everyone was demanding for the CEO of NBC to step down because they felt like he was not looking out for the best interests of the TV station. And so, I don't think he stepped down yet, but maybe they're probably going to take a different direction in order to get rid of him slash force him to step down. In the meantime, everyone's NBC TV shows are back on air, and that should be exciting news for anyone who's an NBC station fan, which I'm not, but, you know, maybe
you're
someone
out there.
Yeah, you guys are out there.
Okay, we're just going to skip the Kihun news.
Whatever!
Okay, so on to Japan. One exciting piece of casting news is Yamashita Tomohisa is going to be in a new TVS drama with Katori Shingo. And I'm so excited for this drama because I love Yamapi. I haven't been keeping my eye on the J-drama scene for a while, but this one sounds really interesting. It's a mystery drama, and he's essentially going to, the two of them are going to be playing cops who are like the good cop, bad cop routine. So I'm super pumped for how he's going to do this. I loved Yamapi and Kurosagi, and I think he's going to be just as interesting.
And Nobuduo Produce.
So.
Yeah, I'm really excited. His role in Kurosagi has been my favorite so far to date, probably because that was like a mystery, action, suspense, like, you gotta work it out in your head type drama, whereas everything else he's been in, like, recently hasn't really been like that. So I'm really, really glad to see him returning to, like, a character that really has to use his deduction skills.
And other things, if anyone wants to get into the J-drama scene, a new season just aired, some ones that I thought were really interesting. Irio Sosa, the second season. It's a police drama that they solve murders based on articles left behind by the victims. So it's kind of like The Art of Deduction by Sherlock. I just finished the BBC series Sherlock, so that's why that's still on my mind. But they had a pretty successful first season, so I think the second season is just going to be just as good. The Higashino Keigo mysteries that I was talking about also aired, and I might watch those because if it's anything like Galileo, I'm going to love it. They're doing a remake of Eighth Great Teacher Onizuka, the very popular manga. And the
I
want to
see how that's
going to
go.
So,
that's like a classic.
I really hope they do with it.
Is it coming out in 2012?
No, it's out. It's part of the new season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
First episode already aired. So you could do that. It's a pretty classic show. And then finally, Rich Man, Poor Woman. It's a pretty stereotypical plot about CEO person who gains his position through chance and a college grad who is yet to attain a job. And it's been done before, the Rich Man, Poor Woman type scenario. But I think the way they do this might make the show really, really interesting, especially if they focus on the troubles and, like, their hardships as people. And I think this could be a really, really good drama if they take it in that direction, so I might watch it. And that's all for news for this week. Coming up after our short music break, we are going to start with our summary and our thoughts of the latest episode, episode 13 and episode 14 of Gaxatal, or Bido Mask.
Cute guy, tall scream. Okie doke, so episode 13 of Gaxatal. Episode 13 and 14, it's pretty crazy. I was a little worried about it up until now because I felt like not much had happened after the initial craziness of Kanto assuming the position of Gaxatal after his brother's death. But he's back in it, and it's pretty awesome.
Dude.
Minus a few.
It's, like, so good. I have not lost. I feel like its pacing has not been dragging at all, and it's just powering through.
I didn't think its pacing was dragging, but I felt like mainly episode 9 and 10, it just felt like not a whole lot had happened compared to, like, the first 8 episodes, and then these recent episodes. At the end of episode 12, Meltdown was running away, and Shinji was trying to chase after her because they were reverting to that old plan of using her to catch Damsari / Gatsukal. When Gatsukal runs in and saves the day, and that is what ended at episode 12. Episode 13 starts, Gatsukal has run away with Meltdown, and they have a farewell moment in which Tanto says in his head, because he can't say anything out loud, that he's going to let her leave. Stay alive, no matter what you're doing. I will come find you. I will find you and protect you. And then they part ways. Back in the office, Shinji is fuming over what just happened. And he also begins to get a little suspicious of Kanto when Goiso comes in and reveals that Kanto hasn't been seen for a while. And that he went to the inn earlier that morning and talked with Mokdan. Throughout this episode, there's numerous moments where Kanto just has no alibi / has a crappy alibi. Or an excuse for why he wasn't somewhere. And this prompts Shinji's suspicions throughout the entire episode, this being the first one. Of course, when Shinji asks Kanto later for an explanation, he comes up with, like, some excuse about how he was looking for Damsari and he was using Mokdan. Blah, blah. Continuing on. Back at the police headquarters later on in the episode, all the policemen are having a meeting about being prepared for the annexation ceremony. And Kono comments about how flamboyant the prelude was to the annexation. If this is how Gatsukal is going to handle the pre-annexation ceremony event, what's he going to do at the actual ceremony? So he threatens the Kimuras and warns them of what will happen if they can't kill Gatsukal this time. And of course, foreshadowing / this is how dramas work, something is going to happen / so we know something's going to happen to the Kimuras, we just don't know what yet. The Kimuras return to their office after Kono makes it clear that they're going to be in deep trouble if anything happens at the ceremony.
Dude.
When so-and-so comes in and reports that the armory was stolen. All right, so now they figured out the armory was stolen after freaking forever. Now Kanto knows that the armory situation has been revealed, and he knows that they know Damsari is behind it. Again, Shinji is suspicious that Damsari may have gotten help from the inside, and Goiso suggests that there's only one Korean in the station, Kanto. Again, Kanto. Shinji is suspicious of Kanto. Because Kanto knows about the intense security of the annexation ceremony, he tries to get Damsari to stop with his plan of bombing the ceremony by going to the count and revealing all of the security plans in front of them while Damsari is there in disguise as President Cha Tae-goon of the gold mining company. Obviously, that doesn't work. Damsari thinks that Kanto can't recognize him and continues with the plan. Kanto realizes that he's going to continue with the plan, and now we're off the annexation ceremony. At the ceremony, Damsari has many close encounters, but eventually he gets in, and just as he's about to pull the bomb out and blow everyone up, Shinji sees him, tackles him, knocks the bomb out of his hand, and starts beating the crap out of him while the lady comrade sneaks out of there. Fortunately for her, Kanto's watching her back. She gets away. Dun, dun, dun. So now everyone's shaken up because of what happened, and Executor decides to give a toast to have everyone calm down. Just as he's giving the toast, Gatsukal appears! Woo! Yay for Kanto! Everyone hides at the table.
You.
Yep, in regular Gatsukal fashion. Kimura Taro gets a gun and starts shooting at Gatsukal, and miraculously seems to be missing him, even from the close range of being in the same room. And he seems to be shooting everyone else besides Gatsukal. Of course, Gatsukal engages Taro in battle, beats him, disarms him, and disarms the gun. Kimura Taro pulls out his sword because he's a Japanese samurai. Gatsukal knocks that out, and in an awesome ending to an episode, he grabs the sword, slashes through the banner because he's Gatsukal and he's got to slash the banner at everything, at every event that he does, and lands with the sword and points it right at Taro's neck. Just as he does that, Shinji walks in, and he sees Gangnam Tall with a sword pointed right at his father's neck. First his brother, now his father. I don't blame him for being obsessed with catching Gangnam Tall, but still, does he shoot his father for the sake of catching Gangnam Tall? We don't know yet, because that's the end of the episode. Yeah, so Cindy, what were your general thoughts about this episode? Anything in particular that stuck out to you? Any comments you want to make?
Yi Kang-cho really needs to, like, watch himself. He is not, he's being so careless, and he's way smarter than that. And I feel like at this point, he should, everyone knows he's smart. And so the fact that he somehow became much dumber.
Or much more careless.
Not even careless. Just like, he hasn't been doing anything, you know? And I feel like no one has, found this suspicious at all. And I'm just like...
Yeah, no one has found...
His diehard attitude has disappeared. Does no one notice?
His diehard workaholic attitude. Yeah, and, like, just the fact that he had such a huge role in the investigation of Gangnam Tall and in the police force in general. And then that role is, like, diminished now. But nobody's, like, wondering where the heck Kang-cho is and why he's never there when Gangnam Tall's there like he used to be. You need to... There's just been too many... Shinji's gonna figure it out, like, pretty soon. He's right on the verge of figuring it out. There's just been so many instances when he's suspicious of Kang-cho. So many times when Kang-cho gives him a crappy alibi or a really weak excuse for why he didn't do what Shinji ordered him to do. And it's just like, you're Kang-cho! You're, like, smarter than that, and you're freaking Gangnam Tall. Like, you can come up... You can create better alibis than what you've been doing.
I mean, the cat's gonna be out of the bag a lot sooner than he wants to. Before he's emotionally ready for it, which I can already see happening.
Yeah. I'm also wondering about... I'm questioning the seemingly lack of effectiveness of the police force shown, and when the executor, like, does absolutely nothing at the ceremony and hides it in her table, and when Taro tries to shoot at Gangnam Tall in the same room and he kills everyone except Gangnam Tall, and then how the police can't even recognize Damsari in his disguise. It's just a mustache and glasses. Like, what the heck? I don't understand at all.
But I guess that's good news for our protagonist, because if they were even a little smarter than what they were, he would have been found out way long ago.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta keep the drama going for the sake of the audience. Alright, so we enter episode 14 with Shinji pointing a gun at Gangnam Tall, who is standing behind Shinji's father with a sword held right at Taro's neck. Now Shinji's got a choice to make. Shoot his father and get Gangnam Tall at the same time, or let Gangnam Tall go. It seems like he's going to the former, because he says, I have to catch him today, father. But then Gangnam Tall is not going to let his best friend lose his own father. He pushes Taro and he starts to get the heck out of there when he gets stopped by Lala's bodyguard and he gets injured. They're going in a head-to-head battle, and this guy's actually pretty good, and he seems like the only guy who seems to be able to do anything against Gangnam Tall.
This battle with Lala's bodyguard is, like, the best fight scene so far, because the other party's actually fighting back, other than him and Shinji. Those are the only people in this drama that can fight.
I know. Like, everybody's, like, incompetent or something. Except for Gangnam Tall and his bodyguard. It seems like Gangnam Tall's really going to go down this time when the power goes out thanks to the old guy that I still don't know the name of. Yay for partners. So the lights are out, Gangnam Tall gets the heck out of that place, but just as he's leaving, that comrade woman decides to complete the mission and throws the bomb into the room. Just as the door shuts, Shinji, the police force, everyone's in there, bomb blows up, woo! Korea 1, Japan 0. Or maybe not, since Damsari was captured. So, yeah. In this episode, we see more psychotic Shinji. We also see more of Kang-cho having crappy excuses for why he's not where Shinji asked him to be. But he's still awesome because he's got Gangnam Tall, so it doesn't even matter. Taro gets fired because he has to take responsibility for what happened at the annexation ceremony, and Kono hits his guts anyway, so it's the perfect excuse for Kono to get rid of Taro. Now, the Lees are facing a problem because they're the ones who gave Damsari the invitation, and they face possible investigation. Kang-cho offers to help him out, but he asks them to keep this a secret. I don't know how that's going to play into it later, but I'm sure it will. Kimura pays a visit after him, and obviously they don't tell him. Back at headquarters, Goiso is interrogating Damsari since he got caught at the annexation ceremony. But, I mean, we should know by now. Damsari's not giving anything away. Kanto gets put in charge of interrogating, and he's not getting anywhere either. I mean, especially because it's Kanto, like his mortal enemy. So Shinji wants to put Damsari in the nail box, which, dude, that thing was really scary looking. Like, I was cringing just looking at that. Kanto's like, well, I mean, obviously, he's not going to let the love of his life, her father, get put in the nail box. So he lets out a burst of anger to distract Shinji from his suspicions. And Shinji comes up with a different plan to figure out where Mokdan is. Shinji remembers the Joseon Army Command Center who took Mokdan and Cho away into this room. And so he decides to get a hold of Cho, the circus owner. Now that Shinji's gone, Kanto has time to talk to Damsari alone. And this is one of my favorite scenes in this episode. So Kanto asks Damsari, like my brother, like yourself, and in his head, like myself, will there be any change from living like this? The great empire won't just end at Joseon. She will take over Manchuria and China. Isn't it like hitting a rock with eggs? And Damsari answers, a layer of egg will just break when it hits the rock. But no matter how sturdy the rock is, it's dead. No matter how weak the egg is, it's alive. The rock will break and become sand when time passes. But one day there will be a chick that will stand upon the sand from the egg. Japan will not be able to beat the egg one day. Epic! That was an awesome analogy. At that moment, Shinji comes in. Damsari is taken to a cell. And Shinji starts torturing Cho with the nail box.
Oh, gosh. That was, like, awful.
That scene was cringe-worthy.
I felt like I was in the box myself. And I was like, oh, my God. This looks so painful.
I know. It was awful. And Shinji was just like, this is nothing. Like, I'm not torturing anyone here. Not being psychotic.
The look on Shinji's face was scary. He was, like, not
doing himself. Dude, he looked insane. He looked like a psychopath. He looked like he was enjoying it, which is really weird. Anyway, it seems like the nail box is doing its job because Cho seems to break down. Or we don't see it, but we assume that he breaks down and tells Shinji where Mokdan is. As Cho is being taken away, Kanto is spying them from behind a wall and realizes that Cho may have given the whereabouts of Mokdan away. But Shinji, being the liar and awful person that he's become, says he got nothing from the interrogation. And so now Kanto's got to do what he can to save Mokdan because he's Gaxitar. So he looks himself into Damsari's cell and demands to know where Mokdan is, saying that Mokdan is in danger and pleading with him. Damsari's pretty confused about why Kanto cares so much about Mokdan. And honestly, I would be too, because the devil slash mortal enemy slash traitor of Korea cares about my daughter. What? That makes no sense. And then Kanto drops the bomb and he says, Booty is in danger. He uses her childhood name, and the worst part of it all is that Shinji saw the whole incident, and he remembers the note that Mokdan left Gaxitar in which she signed it, Booty. Uh-oh, so he's probably working out all in his head, but we don't know what actually happens because that's the end of the episode. What a cliffhanger. Wow, that was an intense episode, intense scene all around. Epic lines. It was a good episode. What were your general thoughts on the episode?
I kind of want to see how Kanto's going to excuse himself out of this one because it's obvious now that he actually cares for Mokdan, judging from the way he's speaking to Damsari, and Shinji witnessed all of this.
Yeah, and the fact that he uses her childhood name.
Shinji's way too smart for all the slip-ups that Kanto's doing, and I think that the writers want to reveal to Shinji that Kanto is actually Gaxitar.
Yeah,
future. Like, probably in the next 4 episodes or so, Shinji's gonna figure the whole thing out. Because he's so close right now to figuring out, at least, that Kanto might not be the
Korea hater that he says he is, and he might actually be trying to help the Korean rebels. And if he figures that out, it's not that long before he figures out that he's Gaxatal. And I think that it's going to happen pretty soon, because then the rest of the series could get really, really interesting, because then he'll know he's actually chasing after his best friend.
Yeah. And I also don't have any other explanation as to why Kagto has suddenly become incompetent at creating alibis and, you know, just, like, making sure that his tracks are covered. I feel like...
He has emotion now. He has a heart.
Yeah, that's probably why he's making mistakes, too. But still, it's for a good reason. And, yeah, I feel like that the writers purposely are making him like this because, yeah, they want Shinji to find out who Gaxatal is. That would be a huge...
dramatic showdown.
Yeah, and... this episode was crazy, but I really, really loved that scene where Kagto was talking with Damsari, because I thought it was really great that he asked him that question, because, like, as of now, like, I feel like Kagto's just been, like, going with the flow. He doesn't really see the big picture yet, and it's really good that he's actually questioning why he's doing this. It shows, like, a little bit of, like, him, like, his old self in there, like, he didn't just do a 180-degree turnaround. Like, he's changing slowly. But he's still Kagto from before, and, like, a new Kagto at the same time. And so I think it's really great that he's, like, he's still questioning it, but he's, like, because, like, this cause that he's fighting for still quite isn't his own. He's, like, doing it because his brother did it, and he's, like, being manipulated by his feelings for Mukdan, and so it's still very much... something that is personal for Kagto right now, instead of, like, fighting for a greater cause like his brother is. And Damsari's epic line about the egg and the rock is awesome.
Alright, so we're going to continue on to A Gentleman's Dignity. We're going to recap episode 15 and 16 after a short music break. Okay, so we're back, guys. Woo! And that song was More Than Me by Jang Dong-gun. What a great song. The soundtrack for this
song. They have like 10 billion songs. Why don't they give some of that to Gaxatal?
Similar to the way they use the music in Secret Garden. Like, you remember the songs from Secret Garden. This is the same. They really use the soundtrack to get all the emotions that we need. Yeah. And it's really, really great how they do that. And this song is, like, amazing. Because, one, it's Jang Dong-gun singing it, and he's also Dojin. So it's like,
yeah. I know. That song is so, like, it just goes straight to the heart for me. I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
And the music in that show, like, sometimes I don't know how to react to a scene, and the music gives the mood away.
I'm like, okay. Oh, no. I'm going to be, like, super sad now. Oh, this scene's not super sad. Okay. All right, so on to the recap. And like Gaxatal, this is going to be a summary of the episode for the extended recap. Check the post right after this podcast, and... you can see all the screencasts and whatnot. So, episode 15. The opening scene is about their time in the military, so that seems really, really funny. Most of this episode is a bunch of flashbacks between Dojin and Isu,
and they both just do a lot of thinking about the other person. So not too much happens in terms of the progression of their relationship. They don't make up. They're just like in this weird in-between phase. The only time Isu even acts like a normal human being that has other feelings slash thoughts beside Dojin is when she's being the teacher and trying to clean up after Dongyeob. Otherwise, she's kind of like Bella from New Moon, in which she doesn't do anything but think about Dojin most of the time. But they still see each other, but they don't talk or do anything or make up. So there's no emotional stability. They just get to see each other all the time still because they can't stop seeing each other. Anyway, Colin also stays in Korea to live with Dojin. Uni and Dojin talk it out and they decide Colin wants to stay here, so they're going to let him. And so Jungrak, Taesan, and Yoon essentially take up their position as his uncles and teach him their ways, even though they're mostly unsuccessful and extremely out of date. Mary and Yoon's relationship, still in the same place. Mary's still pursuing Yoon, and Yoon secretly likes Mary, but he's too stubborn to do anything about it. Slash, he treasures the relationship between the four men and with Taesan too much to actually do anything. But this episode, it's the importance of that relationship is spelled out once again for Mary, and she's told by Yoon that his friendship with her brother is more important than Mary. Yep, she's gonna have a lot of reflecting to do. Sarah also finds out in this episode that Taesan actually paid back her debt, which means that sometime in the near future they're probably gonna confront each other and probably make up, because
that's just what they do.
Yeah, it's time for them to make up. And the episode ends with Isu and Dojin eating together, not speaking to each other, doing their still seeing each other thing, when Isu's phone rings, and what do you know? It's her mom. So as she's getting up to leave, Dojin does the iconic K-drama wrist grab and holds her back and asks her who it is, and Isu says it's her mom. She also says, maybe you could take a few tips from my mother. She raised someone else's child for 20 years, too. If you're not coming, then let go of this wrist. That was hurtful. Those were some hurtful words, Isu. But that's the end of the episode, so we'll see where they are in episode 16. So this episode was really, really annoying. On the Isu Dojin thing. You're not doing anything. Nothing's happening. If you're still gonna see each other, what was the point of picking up? Like, at least reflect all by yourselves before you meet up again. So that was super annoying in this episode, because there was a lot of flashbacks to happier days, and they just kept thinking about all the memories they had. A bunch of filler stuff, but what you gonna do?
But yeah, I was just like, you guys are not going to get over each other like that. Like, you see each other every day still. Anytime Isu wants to get her Doji fix, she just calls him up. And I'm just like, you're not going to get over each other. You're not going to break up. That's just asking for it.
Yeah, I'm so excited, though, for what the three uncles are going to teach Colin, because they're so funny and Colin's expressions are also hilarious, and it's like, they're trying to be awesome uncles, and Colin's like, I am gonna pretend.
Wait, Colin has expressions?
Yeah, Colin has expressions. They're so funny.
I feel like he has the same expressions throughout the entire drama.
No, you gotta watch him. It's so funny, and I can't wait for them to play out that relationship. I also really want them to flesh out the relationship between Dongyeob and Isu, because Dongyeob is like, Isu thinks of her, like, he's so important to her as her student, and
I really want to see how that relationship goes. That's one of the other things about this drama. The Doji Nisu thing takes up a lot of time, but there's still moments where the relationships with the other people in this drama make it really worth watching when the main couple is being stupid.
Yeah, dude, like, that was just, like, immature, like, what? You're gonna break up on my terms, so whenever I want you to do something, I'm gonna call you, but don't say anything to me, what?
Yeah, I'm hoping that this doesn't last too long, because I don't think I can take too much of this, because it's like, oh my gosh, so annoying. Please act like adults, or pretend to act like adults or something. But we'll see where it takes them. So on to episode 16. The opening scene is actually a flashback to Yoon's wife's death, and it goes through their time as they experienced her funeral. So that was one of the few flashback scenes that hasn't been them hanging out together and being guys, and you get to find out more about their personalities and the relationship they actually have with each other. But this is the first one where they were actually having, like, a hard time together. You could see how much you needed the support from the four of them. So this opening scene was really kind of sad. It was
really heart-wrenching. It was heart-wrenching, but, like, it just showed, like, that's their brotherhood. Like, that's what I love about the show, the relationship between the four guys. It's like, no matter what, we stick together. Which is why it makes, like, Yoon and Mayari, that relationship so, like, I want it to happen, but it's like, dude, it's up against this.
But following the end of episode 15, Issa's about to leave to meet with her mom, and Dojin decides, he answers her by saying, I'd rather come with you and know whether you're crying alone or driving or whatever, rather than not. So Isu walks away, of course, to meet with her mom. But Dojin secretly follows her, so he knows that Isu's upset about her mom and how her mom wants to speak with her about the inheritance and doesn't wants her to stay out of it so she can get more money. So Doji knows all of this. Throughout episode 16, Isu and Dojin still don't progress in their relationship. They're still stuck in this limbo period where they see each other and don't do anything about it. So, but this episode, Isu has even more of an excuse because she's Colin's new homeroom teacher. So she exploits that to continue to meet with Dojin. So I'm like, you don't need excuses to see each other because every time one of you calls the other, you see each other anyway. But enough of that. But because of the fact that Isu's so upset about her mom's family and how they keep coming to see her and threatening her about the inheritance, and how she should, like, stop her mom, Dojin secretly takes action at the cafe that Isu's meeting with her brothers, and he threatens them that if they come and see her, they'll be violent, slash, take them to the law, slash, I don't know, other things that they can do, so he's, of course, backed by the other three. They are right behind him on this one. And so before Isu gets back to them, all three of them leave. But she finds out because all of that is caught on camera, on a cell phone camera, by the shop employee who watches all of it. And Isu finally sees that Dojin still really loves her, even though he won't do anything. So time for action on Isu's part, finally. Meanwhile, Tae-san and Sarah also make up in this episode after Sarah confronts him about paying back her debt. And they make up at the hospital when she watches him at this marriage meeting, which was hilarious because the other girl was so outrageous the complete opposite of Sarah. But they finally make up. But we knew that was going to happen anyway, so whatever. We get to see more progression between Jung-Rock and Min-Suk's relationship, which is awesome because those two are, like, the funniest couple ever. They're already married, so you don't have to worry about them, like, potentially not getting together because they're already together. Unless she divorces her, but that's, like, a common occurrence, the threat of divorce between the two, so you never really think that they're actually going to break up. But there's a great scene in this episode in which the two of them essentially act like a husband and wife. So that seems awesome. You do hear that Jung-Rock actually cares about Min-Suk. Another thing that happens in this episode is Mayari actually goes to visit Hyun's wife's memorial. So that's why the opening funeral scene makes sense, because in this episode they also celebrate her death. And we see Mary standing in front of his ex-wife. She has like this heart-wrenching scene where she's asking his ex-wife to give her permission to like Yoon, and Yoon sees all of this, and so it's just like a standstill scene where they all want to act but they can't because they know that it would jeopardize their friendship. So we'll see whether Mary actually gets to Yoon before this show ends. But this episode ends with a scene between Dojin and Isu. So Isu walks up to Dojin holding a shoebox. And yes, it's exactly what we're all thinking. She has a pair of shoes inside, and she says to him, "When you come to me, wear them on a good day, prettily." Which is the exact same thing he said to her when he gave him her shoes and told her to wear them when Isu's coming to Dojin. And that's the end of the episode! So the end of this episode saved the show for me, because if at the end of this episode they were still at a standstill with their relationship, I would have, like, killed the both of them. Isu is finally chasing after Dojin now, and I kind of want to see what that's going to be like, because I miss the old Dojin where he is, like, super jokey and awesome.
Yeah, this angst crying, like, That last episode when he was crying in his room, that was heartbreaking. I wanted to cry.
I know.
Oh my gosh, that's so good. Like, what an actor.
Playing in the background, it completed the scene. But I'm so happy to see that their relationship is probably going to progress again, because now Isu's actually making a move, and even if Dojin's still resisting, it can't be too long. Because now Isu wants to be with Dojin, and she's gonna go after him.
I think this is just me being, like, American, but I was just like, so what? He has a kid. You guys can still be together!
I know.
And, like, he was like, oh, we don't... Like, she didn't want anything from Jang Dong-gun. She was like, I love my husband.
I'm pretty sure it's just, like, the society, because I still didn't get it either. Like, so what? He has a kid. Like, that's okay. You can still be together. But they did have this scene where the teachers, Isu's colleagues, were talking about how can she be an ethics teacher and date a man who has a child. So I think that's where they were trying to get the point across, that this is not going to be good for Isu's reputation. So she's going to have to face that if she has to be with Dojin. So, but there's way worse obstacles that they could have, so I don't see the problem with this.
Yeah, they were just like, I felt like they made such a big deal of it, and I was like, okay, well, and like the way that I knew that it was a big deal was just with the music again. I was like, oh, okay, this should be a big deal.
Also, I'm really excited because I think Colin and Dongyo are going to be like the next two gentlemen at their 40s. I can't wait to see that. I love how the show keeps bringing in new relationships and, like, fleshing out other relationships and doesn't focus on just the one. Like, I want to see if these two actually become good friends, because I think they're going to become really, really good friends.
Oh, and yeah.
They're going to be Isu's students, which is really funny.
Yeah, that scene when they were both in the nurse's office.
I was cracking up. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to next week's episode. Way to leave it on a cliffhanger, as usual. This show, like, kills me. The episode, because it comes out on Saturday and Sunday nights. Or, yeah, on Saturdays and Sundays. And the Saturday night episode is fine. I'm like, okay, I just have to wait a day for the next episode to come out. But then they leave an even bigger cliffhanger before I have to wait a week for the next episode to come out. And I'm like, ah, you're killing me here, guys. But we'll see. It's going to be awful when I have to wait, like, 3 weeks between the
finale. 18th episode and the 19th and 20th episode? Dude, yeah. That's going to be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. Especially if they keep doing it like this, where I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait.
And I feel like they're just going to, like, drop a bomb, like, right before, like, you know, his memory. Like, his memory thing is still, like...
Oh my gosh, I forgot his memory thing.
Yeah, I know. Like, they can't just, like, bring that in and be like, oh, it's... He gets stressed and he loses his memory. And then, like, oh, that's the end of that. We're never going to see his memory problems again.
Yeah. I can't wait to see how they're going to tie this show up, because it's going to really end nicely, but it's going to take a lot of creative writing.
Yeah, I'm, like, super excited for Yoon and Mayari, because I know that Mayari is still pretty, like, immature, and, I mean, dude, she's, like, older than me, so, like, I don't understand how a 40-year-old thinks, but, like, that scene where she goes to visit Junga, I thought that was really mature of her. And she was just, like, she knows that she shouldn't like it, and she's apologizing for liking it. I thought, yeah, that was definitely, like, one of her more mature moments, and, like, I feel like that is, like, the beginning to...
get to Yoon, hopefully, maybe.
Yeah, or maybe... Taesan being forgiving and being like, all right, whatever. But they're my favorite couple on the show. I love them.
No, my favorite couple is Min-Suk and Jung-Rak. They are so funny. And, like, it's also heartbreaking because Min-Suk really wants Jung-Rak to like her.
He just does all this stuff.
He really wants her to, like, actually date her. She wants a relationship. And those two... are, like, saving me right now, while this Dojin Isu thing is hurting my heart. So glad they have a few scenes to patch things up.
Yeah, that bike scene was just...
It was so awesome. I loved
it. I was so happy for Min-Suk. And, like, when
she's
he, like...
such a great character. She's, mm-hmm. like, so down to earth, and I love Min-Suk's character.
Yeah, she's not, like, the quintessential, like, mean person... who's, like, gonna ruin everything and is, like, older or whatever. Like, she has really deep feelings, and she gets angry, but she's also funny, and she helped Isu out whenever she was talking to that mom.
Yeah, I know.
Awesome.
That was awesome,
too. Min-Suk, like, being awesome.
But I can't wait to see the next episode. I'm really looking forward to it. Look for the extended recap for these episodes. We'll probably post a few GIFs up. Unless we find some on Tumblr that we like, which there's a ton on Tumblr, so I'm sure we'll find something. Continuing on, we have our first reviewed drama after a short music break. Okay, we're back, guys. And so this week we're going to review Shut Up Flower Boy Band, which came out earlier this year. The song it played was actually from Shut Up Flower Boy Band, and the soundtrack for this
drama is one of the best soundtracks I've ever heard for a drama. Which would make sense, because it's like a musical. It's not a musical, but it's a band drama. Little background information. It's the second installment in TVN's Oh Boy project, which is, like the name, it features a lot of flower boys, so really handsome men. First series that aired as a part of this was Flower Boy Robin Shop, and that was great. That was so funny.
That was so funny.
The second, the Shut Up Flower Boy band is hopefully gonna be just as good as a part of this line. Because they're doing a really good job so far, even if all the people who are acting in it were cast through this, like, audition show, and the only thing that their requirement was that they just had to be handsome.
I was really worried about Shut Up Flower Boy Band at first, because, dude, like, Shut Up Flower Boy Band, like, what kind of name is that?
I know. Okay, so Shut Up Flower Boy Band is about a band named Eye Candy, and it's about the relationship between all of the bandmates. The beginning of the series, we have Byung-yi playing the band leader, and there's five other guys in the band: Kwon Ji-yuk, Yi Hyun-su, Jang Do-il, So Kyung-jung, Kim Ha-jin, and those are the other members in the band. And so they ruled their high school, essentially, but it's being shut down, so they have to move to a new high school. And at the new high school, there's a rival band named Strawberry Fields. They duke it out at the beginning of the episodes, at the beginning of this season. And this drama is essentially about their lives as high school students. It's a coming-of-age story. So it's about them and their friendships and their relationships and all they go through because they're young high school students. Ju Byung-yi, the leader of the band at the beginning of the series. This isn't really a spoiler, but he dies in, like, the second episode, so he doesn't last very long. It's just an extended cameo. And after he dies, his character is really interesting, but after he dies is when the series really gets going and really focuses on the band and their friendships with each other. And that's essentially what this drama is about.
Ju Byung-yi was... He's a lot like Do-jin and like in A Gentleman's Dignity, except more angsty and obviously high school. But like, he was such a character that was like bigger than this world. I was just like, it was hard to like even focus on the other characters because he was so full of charisma. And
yeah. Which is why I think the show really picked up for me after the second episode. Starting with the third after Byung-hee died, because he was a really lovable character, but they wasn't really to able go full steam with the show until after his death, because then they were able to focus on all of the other characters, and I think that was what made the show so good for me. Like, I loved this show. I loved the way it filmed and the way that they did it. It wasn't, I mean, of course there's gonna be moments, things like this will not happen in real life, but it was like a really good underdog story.
Yeah, and it was like, it was real. It felt so real. Like, it was like, the look and feel of this drama was completely different from Ramen Shop. I was like expecting something like Ramen Shop again, like, you know, like funny, cute, and upbeat. And this was like, the look and feel of it, it was rough, down to earth. You're really getting into like the problems of these high schoolers, and they get into some really bad
sticky situations. Yeah, and just watching them deal with all of that and like be high schoolers was inspirational. And like watching all of these characters, watching their friendship was like so inspirational because they stuck through it all. They showed that it's more important than almost anything. And like, the coming of age part was so well done. You expect things to end one way in a drama, and they didn't follow what people wanted. The audience wants something to happen, and I love that in this series they actually did it as if we were watching these five like kids, or these five teenagers essentially, go through life. And it was super
awesome watching that.
It felt so real. And it's like, it's really cool because, well, obviously, we're not that far out of high school ourselves. And it, this drama reminds me so much of like John Hughes movies that are about high school students just trying to find their identity and their place in life, where they want to go. It was really great because it just reminds you of, well, at least reminded me of like being in high school, being like, oh, searching for yourself, whatever, all the stuff, all the friends that you have, and these are friends that you've had like for your whole life, and the like the friendships that they had.
Yeah, there's really not much more we can say about it. We truly, like, this is such a good drama, and there is no real antagonist in this drama, because, like I said, it's them living life. So, and the antagonist is really just life and society, and not one person, which makes it such a great, like, human relationship drama. And also, the soundtrack's really good, but...
Dude, yeah, the soundtrack is epic! Amazing. Yet another reason why this drama is awesome. They actually use legit music. They had... First, they have Rob Lowe. They do a cover of Rob Lowe's Not in Love. And that song that, you know, that plays whenever Jiyeon is talking to Sua and stuff, that's a Radiohead song.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, they really use the music well in this drama. Similar to A Gentleman's Dignity, where the music really gets to you, the music is so well done in this drama. I would watch it for the soundtrack alone, because it's amazing. We definitely recommend this drama. If you're looking for a drama it's a high school drama about teenagers, it's kind of like a slice of life. It focuses on the relationships, has a great soundtrack.
It's so funny, too.
It's funny, it's really well-paced, and if you're looking for a drama that features a friendship that's just as strong as the friendships in A Gentleman's Dignity, but still
got a character of its own.
Still has. So, if you're looking for a band drama, band, high school, relationship, human...
Just watch it! Like, it's so good!
Just watch it. If you haven't already. Like, now.
So, that concludes the third episode of Two Peas in a Drama Pod. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. It is a little long, but that's probably because we recapped 4 episodes and we did a review.
Let us know what you think about our recaps and our reviews. Email us at 2peasinadramapod if you have any requests. Anything you'd like to say, we'd be happy to hear. Email us at 2peasinadramapod, and we hope you enjoyed the episode.
See you next week. I'm not